A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been eyeing hammocks the way some people eye sports cars. Years of research, zero purchases, waiting for the right driveway. He wants the garden hammock dream, but the Jerusalem rental reality means no garden yet. So he's got four specific questions. 1. Is there any collapsible indoor hammock stand that's actually stable enough to nap in without that constant low-grade suspicion that it's about to fold you into a fabric taco? 2. For the real outdoor thing, what does a decent one cost? 3. What's the upkeep if it lives outside uncovered? And 4. What hardware do you actually need to hang it properly?
And the collapsible stand question, that's the one that got me, because it sounds like a simple engineering problem. Fold it up, put it away, pull it out when you want a nap. But the physics of what a hammock does to a stand, that's where this gets interesting.
I want to sit with that word aspirational for a second, because Daniel used it and I think it's the right word. A hammock is one of the few purchases where the entire point is that you're buying permission to do nothing. It's not a treadmill that folds under the bed so you can optimize your cardio. It's a deliberate anti-productivity signal. You hang it up and you're announcing to the household and yourself that this patch of air is now dedicated to horizontal stillness.
And that's exactly why the instability problem matters. If your anti-productivity purchase is itself a source of low-grade anxiety, it's failed at the one thing it exists to do. You're lying there calculating load vectors instead of napping. That's worse than not having a hammock.
So we went looking for answers and found a surprisingly technical rabbit hole. Geometry constraints, UV degradation rates, a 35-pound stand that technically folds, but not in any way that helps you. And at least one man who was paid to nap for a living, but we'll get to him.
The hammock isn't a single product category. It's a spectrum that runs from $20 nylon rope sacks that feel like lying in a fishing net, all the way up to $400 hand-woven Mayan cotton pieces that are closer to furniture than camping gear. And where you land on that spectrum determines everything. Stability, comfort, how long it lasts, whether you actually use it, or whether it becomes a decorative porch item you walk past feeling vaguely guilty about.
Daniel's constraint is the one that actually trips up most people. He doesn't have two perfectly spaced trees, he doesn't have a garden yet, and he doesn't have anywhere to store a big indoor stand. That last one, the storage problem. That's the real bottleneck. Most people who want a hammock don't have the anchor points. The stand is the purchase decision, and it's also the hardest technical problem in the whole category.
So here's how we're going to work through this. We start with the collapsible indoor stand question, because it's a geometry puzzle nobody has fully solved, and the reasons why are instructive. Then we move to outdoor cost and quality, what you're actually buying at different price points. Then installation hardware, then maintenance. The answers cascade. What you learn about stand physics informs what you look for in outdoor hardware, which informs what you're willing to pay, which informs how much upkeep you'll tolerate.
Let's start with the thing Daniel actually asked about first, the collapsible indoor stand. And I'm going to spoil the ending. The answer is mostly no.
Mostly no, with one partial exception. Here's the physics. When you lie in a hammock, the suspension lines pull inward and downward. The downward force is your weight. That's easy, gravity handles that. The inward force is the horizontal component, and it's substantial. A hammock hung at the standard 30-degree angle from horizontal. We'll come back to why 30 degrees matters, exerts a horizontal pull of roughly half your body weight on each anchor point. So if you weigh 180 pounds, each side is pulling inward with about 90 pounds of force.
And a stand has to resist that inward pull without tipping, without bending, and without wobbling. The way it resists is through leg spread. The wider the base, the longer the lever arm counteracting the tipping moment. A fixed stand can be as wide as it needs to be. My stand, for example, I've had the same one for years, has a footprint that's basically the size of a small car.
Wait, you have a hammock stand?
I'm a sloth, Herman. Of course I have a hammock stand. It's practically a cultural artifact.
All right. We're not going to unpack the Mongolia thing right now. The point is, a fixed stand solves the stability problem with geometry and mass. The Vivere double hammock with space, saving steel stand, this is the one Wirecutter recommends, about $130, weighs around 35 pounds and has a 9-foot long base. It's stable because it's heavy and wide. But here's the catch Daniel needs to hear, space saving. Here means it breaks down into two large pieces. It doesn't fold into a closet, it doesn't collapse to umbrella size. It disassembles into two still substantial steel sections that you then have to store somewhere.
And the cheaper foldable stands. The ones under $80 that actually do fold up. They use a central pivot design with thin gauge steel tubing. Weight rating around 250 pounds. The failure mode isn't catastrophic collapse, it's lateral wobble. The legs aren't splayed wide enough, so they can't fully resist that inward pull. Every time you shift your weight, the stand micro-adjusts. You feel it. It's not going to dump you on the floor, but it's also never going to let you forget you're in a contraption.
That's the phrase, right there. You're in a contraption, not a hammock. The whole point is weightlessness, and the wobble is a constant reminder that you're suspended between two metal poles that are barely winning an argument with physics.
And this isn't a materials problem. It's a geometry problem. You could make the stand out of carbon fiber and it wouldn't fix it. The issue is that foldability requires reducing the leg spread angle, which reduces the lever arm, which increases the tipping moment. You can't have a stand that folds to the size of a golf bag and also provides a stable base for a 200-pound adult in a hammock. The two goals are in direct tension.
There's a reason nobody has solved this. It's not that the outdoor gear industry lacks clever engineers. It's that the constraints are mutually exclusive. Stability wants mass and width. Portability wants low mass and a small folded profile. You can optimize one or the other, or you can compromise on both and get a wobbly stand that nobody enjoys.
So if Daniel wants an indoor hammock and can't store a 35-pound two-piece steel stand, what are his options? There's the hammock chair route. Single point ceiling mount, no stand, much smaller footprint. But that's a different product. A hammock chair hangs from one point and creates a pendulum effect. You can sit in it. You can swing gently. You can't lie flat and nap. It's a chair that happens to be made of hammock material, not a hammock you sit in.
The ceiling mount for a full hammock is technically possible, but it's its own project. You need to find a joist, not a stud, a joist, something structural in the ceiling. Drill a pilot hole, install a heavy-duty eye bolt rated for well above your body weight. The static load is one thing, but getting in and out of a hammock generates dynamic loading that can spike to 2 or 3 times your body weight. A single 2x6 joist can handle 300 plus pounds of static load, but that dynamic spike is what makes people nervous, and it's why indoor stands exist in the first place.
And drywall anchors, if anyone's thinking about it, will fail. Not might fail. Will fail. The first time you put weight on it, the anchor pulls through the drywall and you and the hammock and a chunk of your ceiling all meet on the floor at the same time.
So that's the collapsible stand problem. A geometry puzzle no one has fully solved and probably can't solve at a reasonable price point. But what if you do have the space? A garden, a yard, 2 trees, or enough room for a fixed stand? Let's talk about what you're actually buying when you buy an outdoor hammock.
Daniel's second question was about cost. How much for a decent one? And the range here is wide, but the quality thresholds are pretty clear once you know what to look for.
Wirecutter's top pick for outdoor hammocks is yellow leaf hammocks. These are hand-woven, made from a dense cotton blend, weight capacity around 400 pounds. They run from about $295 to $395. And that price isn't just branding, the weave density is the thing. A tightly woven hammock distributes your weight evenly across hundreds of small contact points. A loosely woven one creates pressure points. After 20 minutes, you feel the difference in your back.
The budget pick that still passes durability testing is the Sunny Life Cotton Rope Hammock, around $90. It's cotton, which means it's comfortable. Cotton has a natural give that polyester doesn't, but cotton also absorbs moisture. Leave it out in the rain once and you're racing mildew. We'll get to that.
The key differentiator at every price point is the suspension hardware. Cheap hammocks, the $30 Amazon specials, use S-hooks. S-hooks deform under load. They stretch open, and eventually the hammock slips off. Good hammocks use stainless steel carabiners or welded O-rings. They also come with tree-friendly suspension straps, 2-inch-wide polyester rated to 400 pounds or more. The hardware alone on a decent hammock is worth about $40 to $60 if you bought it separately.
So the $90 Sunny Life is really a $50 hammock with $40 of competent hardware. The $30 Amazon one is a $15 hammock with $15 of hardware that's going to fail. You're not saving money at the low end. You're just prepaying for a replacement.
And then there's the fabric itself. Cotton versus polyester versus solution. Dyed acrylic. Cotton feels best. It breathes. It's soft. It conforms to your body. But cotton rots. Polyester is durable and dries fast, but it can feel plasticky and it gets hot. Solution dyed acrylic. That's what brands like Sunbrella use for outdoor furniture, is the gold standard for weather resistance, but it's expensive and rare in hammocks. The Camacru Double, around $90, is polyester with a UV-resistant treatment. It's a good compromise if you need something that can handle being outside more than a cotton hammock can.
Let's move to installation, because this is where most people who do have the space still get it wrong. Daniel asked what you need to do the job well.
The standard recommendation is 12 to 15 feet of horizontal distance between anchor points. The hammock itself should hang at a 30-degree angle from horizontal. The suspension attaches 5 to 6 feet up on each anchor point. Those numbers aren't suggestions. If you hang it too tight, less than 30 degrees, the fabric tension makes it impossible to lie diagonally, which is the whole point of a gathered-end hammock. You end up curved like a banana with your shoulders pinched together. Too loose and you bottom out, the fabric wraps around you like a cocoon, and getting out requires a level of core strength most people don't possess at nap time.
The 30-degree thing. This is the detail that separates a hammock you use from one that hangs there looking decorative. When the angle is right, you can lie flat diagonally across the fabric. Your spine stays neutral. It's more comfortable than most beds. When the angle is wrong, you're fighting the hammock the whole time.
For outdoor hanging, tree-friendly straps are non-negotiable. 2-inch-wide polyester rated to 400 pounds or more. Rope directly around a tree trunk damages the bark. It girdles the tree, cuts off nutrient flow, and can kill it within a season. The straps distribute the load across a wider surface area. Your hardware stack is 2 tree straps, 2 carabiners, and optionally 2 whoopee slings for adjustability. Whoopee slings are just adjustable rope loops. They let you fine-tune the length without retying knots. Total cost for good hardware, bought separately, $40 to $60.
And if you're hanging from posts or a stand, the same principles apply. The attachment point needs to handle the horizontal pull, not just the downward weight. A 4x4 post set 3 feet into concrete will do it. A 2x4 screwed to a deck railing will not.
I've seen that failure. Someone used a deck railing as an anchor point. The railing was designed to resist outward force at waist height from someone leaning on it, not inward force at 5 feet from a hammock under dynamic load. The whole section pulled free. Nobody was hurt, but the hammock and the railing both ended up in a heap.
Which brings us to Daniel's third question. Upkeep, especially outdoors, uncovered. And the honest answer here is going to sound discouraging, but it's better to know now.
No hammock thrives in uncovered outdoor storage. None. UV radiation degrades polyester and nylon. They become brittle within 6 to 12 months of direct sun exposure. The fabric loses tensile strength, and one day you sit down and it tears along a UV-damaged seam. Cotton rots if it stays damp. Mildew can set in within 48 hours of being wet. And cotton hammocks are thick. They hold water. If it rains on a Tuesday and you don't take it down, by Thursday you've got black spots that will never come out and the fabric is already weakening.
The standard advice is, take it down and store it dry after each use, which nobody does. Nobody. You leave it up because taking it down defeats the spontaneity of the thing. The hammock is supposed to be there, waiting, ready for an impulsive 15-minute nap. If you have to rig it every time, you'll use it twice the first week and then never again.
If you absolutely can't take it down, and I understand why you can't, the most weather-resistant option is a polyester or solution-dyed acrylic hammock. The Camacru Double One mentioned, around $90, has a UV-resistant treatment. But even that needs to come in for winter. Weather-resistant in hammock marketing means won't disintegrate in a single rainstorm. It doesn't mean lasts multiple seasons of full sun and rain.
The maintenance routine, if you're doing it right, hand wash with mild soap every 2 to 3 months of regular use. No machines. The agitation damages the weave. Air dry completely before storage. Check the suspension hardware for rust or deformation before each use. Most hammocks fail at the connection points, the rings, the carabiners, or the fabric loop where it attaches, not the fabric body itself. The fabric is usually the strongest part.
Here's the hidden cost math. If you leave a hammock up outdoors uncovered, plan to replace it every 1 to 2 years. A $300 yellow leaf becomes $150 per year expense. A $90 Sunny Life replaced annually is $90 a year, cheaper in absolute terms, but you're throwing away a hammock every year, which is worse for the planet and means you're always sleeping on a new, not yet broken-in hammock. A cotton hammock takes about a month of regular use to really soften up. If you replace it annually, you're perpetually in the break-in period.
That covers the hardware and the upkeep. But before we wrap up, Hilbert's been...
The real question underneath all of this, and I think this is what Daniel's actually circling, is whether the hammock as lifestyle thing is even compatible with not having ideal conditions. And I don't think the answer is no, but I think it requires being honest about which compromises you can live with.
The wobbly stand you can't relax in, not worth it. The ceiling mound you're not confident about, definitely not worth it. But the $90 polyester hammock on a fixed stand, knowing you'll replace it every couple of years, that might be the sweet spot. You're not buying an heirloom, you're buying a few years of good naps.
You're all overcomplicating this.
Hilbert.
I tested hammocks for a summer, 2007, Boulder, Colorado. Startup called Altitude Rust. They had venture funding and a patent-pending stand design that was supposed to solve the folding problem. My job was to lie in prototypes for 4 hours a day and fill out reports. Comfort rating, stability score, time to fall asleep. They paid me $11 an hour.
Did the stand work?
No. It folded. The problem was it also folded while you were in it. They shipped 12 units before the recall. But that's not my point. My point is, the best hammock I ever used was a $40 Brazilian cotton job I bought from a street vendor in Salvador. No stand, no carabiners, no tree straps. Just rope tied to 2 palm trees. The trees were exactly the right distance apart. The ground was soft sand. I slept in that thing every afternoon for 3 weeks, and it was more comfortable than any $400 engineered hammock I tested in that lab.
Because the conditions were perfect.
Because the conditions were perfect. The problem isn't the hammock. It's that most of us don't have 2 perfectly spaced palm trees and a beach. So we buy stands and straps and UV-resistant fabric, and we try to recreate something that was never supposed to need any of that.
What did you buy after that summer? After you tested every prototype and found the perfect hammock in Brazil?
Nothing. I never bought a hammock. I know too much. I know that every hammock you can actually buy is a compromise between portability and comfort, and I can't unsee the compromises. I still have the test reports in a Google Doc somewhere. Spreadsheets. Sleep latency data. The whole thing.
You have sleep latency data for prototype hammocks from 2007.
The R7 model put me out in 4 minutes flat. It also collapsed if you shifted your weight more than 15 degrees off center. There's a footnote about it.
Your advice to Daniel is, don't buy one?
My advice is, buy the $90 polyester one and accept that it'll die in 2 years. Or wait until you have 2 trees the right distance apart and then buy the $40 cotton one and accept that you'll have to take it down when it rains. The middle ground, the engineered solutions, the collapsible stands, the weatherproof coatings, that's where the disappointment lives.
That's actually a useful framework. The disappointment lives in the middle. The cheap hammock on perfect trees works because the trees are doing all the engineering. The expensive hammock on a heavy fixed stand works because you've accepted the footprint and the cost. Everything in between is trying to cheat physics and charging you for the attempt.
That's the thing Daniel's really up against. He doesn't have the trees, and he doesn't want the permanent stand in his apartment. Those are the two ends of the spectrum that actually work. Everything else is a wobbly compromise, literally.
The R7 had a central pivot with a locking pin. The pin was supposed to prevent lateral movement. It was a 1/4-inch steel rod. I weigh 170 pounds. The pin sheared on the 3rd test cycle. I still have it somewhere.
The pin?
Yeah, it's in a drawer.
Hilbert, I want to ask you something. You spent a summer quantifying relaxation, comfort scores, sleep latency, stability ratings. Did measuring it change how you experienced it?
Yes. After the first week, I couldn't nap in a hammock without analyzing it. I'd catch myself thinking, this weave density is suboptimal, instead of falling asleep. That's when I knew I wasn't going to buy one. The Brazilian hammock worked because I wasn't being paid to evaluate it. I was just a guy on a beach.
The observer effect applied to napping. That's, I don't know whether that's tragic or just very on brand for a startup.
The startup folded in 2008. The founder now sells enterprise software. I looked him up.
The hammock industry is over-engineering, a fundamentally simple object, and the people who know it best are the ones least likely to buy one.
Well, that's about right.
That's useful, Hilbert. The frame you just gave us. Cheap and simple on one end, heavy and permanent on the other, disappointment in the middle. That's a better answer than any product recommendation.
It leaves us with an open question. As more people live in apartments without yards, the indoor hammock stand market is going to keep growing. Someone will eventually solve the geometry problem, probably with a telescoping, counterweighted design that uses mass instead of leg spread to resist the tipping moment. But it won't be cheap, and it won't be light. The physics doesn't budge.
You could imagine a stand with water-filled base weights. Empty, it's portable, fill it up, it's stable. But now you're moving hundreds of pounds of water around your apartment. That's its own set of problems.
The tension between simplicity and consumer engineering. That's where we're landing. A hammock is a rectangle of fabric and two ropes. Everything else is solving for the absence of two perfectly spaced trees and a beach. And the solutions work, mostly, but they add cost and complexity to something whose entire appeal is that it's supposed to be simple.
If you've got a weird prompt, and after 4,000 episodes, we know you do, send it to prompts@myweirdprompts.com. We read every one, and yours might be the next deep dive into something that seems simple until you actually look at it.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumintop, who apparently has a sheared locking pin in a drawer and sleep latency data from 2 decades ago. This has been My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
Go take a nap, preferably somewhere with two perfectly spaced trees.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.